This is Power of the Tribe podcast with John Connors. Hi, I'm John Connors. I'm your host, and I'm also the founder and head instructor of Connors Martial Arts here in Norwood, Massachusetts. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing, and mixed martial arts. And the theme of our podcast is a tribe can give you exactly what you need to make a positive change in your life. If there's some part of your life that you feel is lacking, it's some void, something you want to improve. If you find the right tribe, they can help you make those improvements, help you transform yourself. And I'm here with my co-host, Dan Robin.
Hey, John.
How you doing, bud?
I'm good.
You're going on a trip?
Yeah, on Tuesday. I'm headed to Tokyo.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, I'm taking my son. He graduated high school. We're going to climb Mount Fuji.
You're an awesome dad. Yeah.
My son, when he was, I think, in fourth grade, he said he'd like to go to Tokyo. And I'm assuming 8 years later that he still wanted to.
That's so funny. What if you spring it on him and he goes, I hate Japan?
I did spring it on him. I was sort of wondering if he was going to be like, yeah, I said that in fourth grade. I'm not Tokyo?
Yeah, and I also wanted to be a firefighter then. Yeah, and I don't want to do that now. And a cowboy. I wanted to be a Japanese cowboy back then.
But also one of the main reasons is I climb a lot of mountains around here, like the White Mountains and the Catskill Mountains. And I wanted to make him think that I got him a crappy present. So I started my intro, you know how we climb a lot of mountains around here? And I knew he was going to think, okay, so we're going up Slide Mountain and the Catskills, or, you know,
we're
going to
climb Blue Hills. Thanks,
yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, so then I got the spring. It's actually Mount Fuji. And we're going to spend 8 days in Tokyo.
Very cool.
Tokyo.
Very clever presentation.
Yeah, yeah. Although one thing about that, I'm starting to come to the realization. I always do that presentation like,
you come in underwhelming,
yeah,
and then
pa-pow. But then I realize that I think it's a bad idea. I think people, they come away still feeling like you gave them an underwhelming
presentation.
What I mean is this. The perfect example is, say, it's your wife's birthday or your anniversary.
All right.
And you come in like, I forgot our anniversary. And then you spring the gift on her. I got you a great gift. A month later,
she's like, didn't you forget my anniversary?
Yeah.
Don't you always forget our anniversary,
exactly.
You jerk?
Exactly. Or like the next anniversary. Say you did forget, she'd think, well, you always...
Where's my car?
You always
Is
forget.
Is Lexus out back?
Yeah, you'd be sitting there. Or she'd just sort of have, you know, say you did, you know, you did that pretend, oh, I forgot, and then you didn't. And then just one time you forgot, she'd sort of feel like, I think you always... Don't you always forget? A bunch of times you forgot.
Isn't the problem with great gifts is that it's all relative and subjective? So now you're setting the bar so high that... You know, either your son or the next kid. It's like, well, where are we going now?
Yeah, Lunar. Yeah. When my daughter graduates and I'm sort of say, hey, weekend in Manhattan. She's going to be like, I don't need a passport for that. Yeah, my brother went to Tokyo.
You love him more than me.
Yeah, I don't know where. I've got to figure out where to take her.
You got to be careful raising the bar on gifts like that, right?
Yeah. Maybe some sort of Disney princess thing. But I mean, she liked that in third grade. So I think I might stop doing this pretend bad gift to good gift. I do it all the time where I'll sort of imply.
The Oprah thing. Have it in an envelope underneath their seat, and then they have to reach under and pull it out.
Just a total surprise.
You get a car.
But I'm thinking, as I'm saying it, I haven't thought about this till literally sitting here right now, that I've done it with my wife where I have, you know, a weekend or 4 days in a luxury hotel, and I'll start with, you know, pack your hiking gear and mosquito netting, you know, something like that, where she'll feel like, okay, so we're okay, you know, sort of pretending that she's excited, but okay, what are we doing? Some kind of hike. And then I say, oh, it's a luxury hotel. But I wonder again, if the back of her mind is sort of a feeling of, didn't we go on a hike or something kind of under, or just not even specifically, but sort of this
underwhelming. What I love about you, you never overthink things, Dan.
Yeah. But I think I'm just going to go with the gift. Look, here's the gift. That's it. No surprises. No
surprises are good, though. Yeah.
Yeah, but straight to the gift, not the I pretend to forgot to
right,
have forgotten
right.
or
that's getting a little old. You got to mix it up.
Yeah,
definitely. Mount Fuji is pretty high, right?
Yeah, 12,000 something feet. Yeah, so that's my one slight fear. I don't mind. I know I can do the hike, but I haven't really dealt with altitude. You know, I hear you get splitting headaches or upset stomach, which that could be.
All right.
Is there any worse situation in the world than being on a busy trail above timberline so that everything's just flat rocks and you get an upset stomach? and you're surrounded by people and there's just nowhere to go and no, you know.
I think that's very variable, though. Some people, it doesn't seem to bother, right?
Oh, you mean altitude. The altitude. Yeah. I think anyone's bothered by having an upset stomach in public.
That's not cool.
But yeah, I don't know. I've been up in altitude before and it didn't, you know, I've been, you know, in the mountains in Colorado, say, pretty up.
What are those?
9,000? Some get up there. I lost track.
Denver's mile high, right? So what's that, 5,000?
Yeah, but I've been even around, I think it was, Bryce Canyon or something, and they're 9,000-10,000 feet, and I didn't feel anything, so.
I was in Ecuador, Quito, Ecuador. How high is that? I forget now.
Did you feel anything?
Nothing.
Yeah, me either. But then again, also, if you're climbing a mountain, maybe that.
So Quito is a little over 9,000, it's saying. And I felt fine.
Yeah, but maybe if you're hiking.
If you're hiking, now you're exerting yourself. Yeah. 12,000, that's another 3,000. Yeah, you'll probably feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. So last week, we talked a little bit about, we got to get down to business, Dan. Enough about Dan. This isn't the Dan podcast. We talked about your sort of origin story and your interest and you might say fascination with fighting and how you got into martial arts. Right.
Yeah.
Could I call it fascination?
That might be a little. I don't. My point was, I think most guys have some interest in it.
Most guys are fascinated about fighting, actually, beyond some interest.
I think so. I think sometimes people say they're not interested, but it's just because they haven't. You know,
they're above it.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think that can be defensive. Sort of, I'm above that, and it's insecurity is right around the corner.
Right.
You know, sort of, I don't care. Fighting's for animals, and it's sort of, it is, but. You're still sort of insecure if you know nothing about it.
I think there's some evolutionary underpinnings to be interested in fighting, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of a fundamental activity almost. So my story of when I got involved in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or martial arts, you know, I did a little martial arts course when I was a teenager, which was a lot of fun. But I started in the 1999, actually, January of 1999. And it was sort of a New Year's resolution thing. It was like, I'm finally going to do this. You know, I wanted to set the stage for people. The 1990s, do you remember, Dan? It was a lot more conservative than it is today, believe it or not. Like, today is so crazy, right? These kids with their Snapchat and Trump tweeting insane things. It's crazy now. In the 90s, it was way more conservative. It's hard to explain, right? Do you remember that?
Yeah. And in the world, then there's also context of the world of fighting, right? That had.
Right.
The UFC was seen very differently. That was 93. So had you followed it? Were you aware of it?
Here's the thing. When the UFC first came out, now it's on mainstream TV. You can buy a pay-per-view, but you can watch it for free too on Fox or Fox Sports 1 or something. Back in the day, it was almost like pornography. I think we talked about that last time. You'd go into Blockbuster and like keep, you know, with sunglasses on and a hat or something and go over and get, you could rent it, right?
Yeah. It was always embarrassing. They'd sort of look at you and maybe give you a disapproving, shake their head or.
It was very disapproving. Yeah. So I actually stayed away from it for a few years because I was sort of, I was in that place where I was a dad and a husband and I was trying to be this really good person and I'm not the type of person that would watch that. That's just awful. And I remember this one story. It had nothing to do with the UFC. It has to do with Seinfeld, of all things. So we had this couple that we were friends with. My wife and I went over to their house for dinner in the 90s. And we said, hey, did you see this new show? It's how old I am. It's awful, right? Called Seinfeld. Isn't it hilarious? And the woman said, yeah, we don't think that's the type of show that we're going to watch. You know, kind of head wagging. It was an immoral show for her.
I
was like, what are you talking about? It was totally inappropriate. And she must have watched that episode where they had the masturbation contest or something. But I don't even think they even used the word masturbation. I don't know how they convey it. But and so in her mind, that show was disgusting and beneath watching. And I was like, oh, gee. I felt like a creep for suggesting that it was a funny show. But that's how conservative it was back then.
Yeah. And tied back into the UFC as people were really outraged. But to be fair,
if you watch Seinfeld now, I mean, they show that, you know, probably 10 times a day around the world that an episode of Seinfeld is being shown. And there's no editing. I mean, it says PG or PG-13 as it gets. But back then, this woman thought it was, and she was a normal person. She wasn't crazy. But in that sort of environment, that milieu of suburban families, young families, it was a little uptight, man.
Yeah. To your point, now there's shows, you know, network TV that'll basically have simulated sex, right?
On TV. Right.
And I just even noticed because I'll be watching with my kids and I'll be like, man, like they're really showing this. Like, you know, like they'll under the sheets pretending, you know, a sex scene. And I sort
and
of
like,
feel like,
how are they actually
pulling that? To your
that
point,
off?
They did not have, in the 90s, they would not have had that.
Absolutely not. So it was a very uptight time. And the point I'm trying to make, I think, is I was in a place where I thought I had all the pieces in place. I had a business that I had been running for about 6 years and it was successful. It was doing well. I was working really hard. I had two kids. We had our house. We literally had a white picket fence in our little yard. And I had moments of bliss. It was perfect. But there was something missing. You know, one thing that made me feel that way was in our little neighborhood, I don't know what your neighborhood is like today. It's probably similar. Landscaping was very important. Like your yard. And I hate any kind of yard work. Like the worst punishment would be raking for me. I would rather do anything than
that.
Have
would be
to
like
rake.
Hell. Like if you know hell, you'd just
hell.
Be forced to rake
right.
all the time.
Right.
I've actually heard you say this, so I know it's a big thing for you.
And my lovely wife at the time really wanted me to do landscaping. And I wanted to hire people. And I'm like, well, I'm making more money per hour and I'm working in crazy amount of hours. I should be paying somebody else to do this, right? But in our neighborhood, it was a point of pride to have a really nice lawn. And I was just totally looked down upon. I was the friggin' misfit of the neighborhood. I was killing everybody's real estate values.
Because you weren't mowing and raking?
No, my lawn was fine. Yeah. But I was secretly looked down upon. You know, they didn't come out and say it, but they thought I was kind of an inferior
person.
You
were slacking.
I was slacking. I was shabby. Yeah, I was a slacker. That's the right word.
Was it? What I always hate about yard work, too, is that it's infinite, right? You cut the grass,
infinite.
It grows. You,
right.
You rake leaves, that more fall. It's not like I'm going to build this wall around my property or something where
right.
then you have a wall and you made something.
Right.
The yard work just
and
goes
on and on. I'm a Rossi kid from Rosendale. And we don't roll with landscaping. Yeah. I had this friend of mine, Billy Hoppy, at the time. He had a house. He just paved over his lawn and painted it green. He's like, done. That, I'm like, that's brilliant. That's the Rossi way to deal with landscaping. But in my neighborhood.
AstroTurf.
Yeah. Well, he didn't even have AstroTurf. He just had green painted hardtop. It was like an old tennis court or something, you know? But we had a couple, the older couple that lived across the street from us, the Leonicellis. This was a weird coincidence. So when I first got married, we had a little apartment, studio apartment with my daughter, neighbor across the street with older Italian couple, and beautiful garden with tomatoes. They'd bring us over the best tasting tomatoes ever. I think it was something to do with that neighborhood of Rosendale where back in the day, people were either Irish American or Italian American. That was pretty much it. And then we moved to a different apartment, and lo and behold, we had an elderly Italian guy across the street with an amazing garden. He would take care of us and bring us over tomatoes. And then this house that I'm talking about, the Leonicellis lived across the street. And they took perfect, you know, care of their lawn and had the garden. And I was just this slacker who wasn't keeping up. I just thought that's a weird coincidence, right? That we had that. Three different people in three different locations.
Giving you tomatoes?
Giving us awesome tomatoes.
So have you moved since then and been like, where are my tomatoes?
Right. Where's our old Italian family? What the hell is going on here? But that's sort of the state that I was in. And in my business, you know, I was probably wearing slacks, you know, khakis or something, and a white button-down shirt. You know, I probably had a little poochy belly. You know, I worked out. I would jog and bench press and all that nonsense. But, you know, I felt like I was too civilized. I was missing something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Felt boring.
I actually think it's pretty common, right, that you sort of have your wild kind of youth.
Oh, right.
And then you, in the years after
settle
that,
down.
Where you feel, but it's like exaggerated, where you feel, right. I have to stop. I have to change.
Right.
And so you exaggerate the change. You say, I'm not going out with my friends maybe at all.
Right.
Or very rarely, or I'm not going to do anything.
Right. You reject things. I'm not going to watch these filthy Seinfeld episodes. I would never watch the UFC.
Yeah.
South Park, that's an abomination. That shouldn't even be allowed on TV. Yeah, and you have these young children, and you kind of go take a hard right almost or something. Right,
I'm going to mow my lawn.
So that's where I was, and I just felt that there was this void, and I was missing something. And you know what it is? this podcast is about tribes. So you're sort of born into tribes and you find yourself in these tribes that have certain conventions and customs and mores, whether it's landscaping or whatever the heck it is. And all of a sudden you're in that and it might not be completely serving you and it may be limiting you. So I think we probably don't have to belong to one tribe. You know, there could be tribes that serve different parts of us.
Sure.
And this is exactly what I was missing. You know, there was a savage inside of me that needed to express itself, you know, physical, creative expression, and that was missing.
Right. And yeah, to our earlier point, I think you have young kids and you sort of reject any other tribe. You sort of feel that I have to focus on this tribe, my family.
That's the prime directive. Right.
And you start throwing out other tribes or tribal associations where you say, I have to focus on this now.
Right. Family comes first.
Yeah.
And that's a evolutionary sort of primal drive, too, to take care of your offspring.
Yeah.
You know, we got to get this genetic information to the next generation and they got to make grandkids and then I can relax and do something else. So that's exactly where I was. That's what I was feeling. And when I decided in January of 1999 to go check out a martial arts school, you know, I had found this old journal of mine. Do you ever have a journal, scribble down your brilliant ideas and your goals and everything?
Well, not since I was a little kid.
Not, you didn't do that as an adult?
No.
I've done it all through my life. I never do it consistently, and then it ends up underneath a couch someplace or in my trunk.
Do you start it, Dear Diary?
Dear Diary, I met a man named Dan today. No, I don't. I just write stuff. Well, I found one, and it had a list of goals. And they say if you write down your goals, you're much more likely to achieve them and all this type of stuff. And I think I had 5 different goals written down. And when I found this journal, this is many, many, many years later, when I found the journal, I found that I actually had accomplished all the goals. So I had some annual salary that I wanted to make. I did that. I wanted to have a certain type of house, and I already had the house. And then one of the goals was I wanted to be a black belt in a martial art. I was like, wow. So I wrote this down. So I think I found this journal, Dan, actually like in 2007 or something when I was a black belt. Hmm. I was like, wow, I actually did all this stuff. But the odd thing was I wrote those goals down, I think, in 1994. So I took 5 years to start my martial arts journey. So for 5 years, I wasn't even following through somehow and answering that call. But I did try to do some martial arts. Like your journey was... You did a little karate first, right?
Yeah.
And then you did some boxing, and then you got to jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, and we're skipping a little bit, right? Like we both had that little bit of the small circle jiu-jitsu.
Right. I had gone before 1999 with my business partner, so that must have been 1994 or something, right? Maybe it was right around that time. And we went to, and my business partner, Mark, was a great guy, and he's open-minded and interested, and he wanted to try something. So we went to this Aikido place. I won't say the name of the place. It's a great place, I'm sure. But we walk in the place and they have this row of cubbies where they have all the shoes stored. You know what I mean? Sneakers, because you're going to go barefoot into the dojo. And I don't know if it was one or many persons, but at any rate, there was the most god-awful smell of feet when you went into this place. I mean, it was freaking overwhelming. And I do have a great sense of smell, but you know me. I'm not like... hoity-toity, or I'm not easily offended or anything.
Squeamish.
No. I mean, I'm not squeamish, yeah. I mean, if you do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you're not going to be squeamish. But it was awful. I mean, I couldn't even think straight. And it ruined the experience for both of us. We were like, what the hell is going on in that place? I might have been one person with really bad feet.
And that ended the Aikido journey for you?
That ended with one class. And then the other, before class, they had some guys doing some kind of sword karate, and they had... There's two young guys with really long ponytails, and they had their outfits on. And it's something about what they were doing in the environment of foul foot odor that just seemed absurd. You know what I mean? They looked a little pretentious, and it smelled awful that we were like, what the hell? And, we didn't go back.
I remember part of the karate journey you just reminded me, because that image of like the sort of the young guy with the ponytail.
Right.
I remember near the end when I was sort of doubting maybe some of the effectiveness of some of the karate I was learning. There was a black belt with a young guy with a ponytail, like you're describing, a black belt. And he interrupted class. He said, I have a real world issue here where I guess he was still a high school kid, like a senior in high school. because of the story, I'm realizing it's been a while since I thought of this, but he said, well, I actually got bullied. And I remember thinking, oh, black belt, you know, getting bullied. I was kind of new.
Right.
And he said, yeah, I got grabbed and I didn't know what move to do. I got an arm pin behind me. And what do you do when an arm pin behind you and you're shoved up against a locker? You know, what would you recommend, sensei? And the instructor said, you
he
know,
got his arm twisted behind his back and yeah, what, and placed face first into a locker
yeah,
or something?
Yeah.
That's not
And
fun.
He said, I didn't know, none of my moves served me in this situation.
Right.
You know? And so the instructor said, well, show me exactly, I can't picture it. Show me exactly what happened.
Uh-huh.
And this black belt says, well, okay, she grabbed me like this. And there's like this awkward pause. And we're like, I'm sorry, what? Like, yeah, she grabbed me like this. And I had that one of those moments of thinking, okay, this is like a black belt senior in high school, and he's getting shoved around by girls in his school.
Hmm.
And I felt, how effective is this martial art exactly if this is what we're doing? And that was just one of those pieces of information. I talked about it last time where you started saying, is this the martial art for me? And how real world is this when
I see actually a crack getting, in the facade here?
Yeah, actually getting grabbed, and you go, well, no, this doesn't. It's sort of like that, what is it, Napoleon Dynamite or something, where they say, like, grab the hand, like, no, the
oh, break
the other.
Wrist, walk away.
Or just grab, no, other hand. Other, no, get, no, you're doing it wrong. I can't show the move if you.
You're attacking me the wrong way.
Yeah, you're attacking me the wrong way. I have no idea what to do. If you come with me the left hand, I have no idea what to do. You know, and it showed some of that. It was sort of the 1-2 punch of, this is a black belt. And he said, I got grabbed in the high school and I didn't know what to do.
I didn't know
because
what to
none
do.
Of the moves worked. And then the idea that he's, you know, a girl's shoving him around, I felt a little bit like, okay, how much real world application do we have here?
That's an odd story. Yeah.
So you were talking about, the other thing, though, is, but to your point, going into part of that story and part of the Aikido story is that back then you did not know which art to do, you know, but
didn't know.
Now people say, why don't you just do, you know, train MMA, train, but we didn't know.
There
I had no idea what worked
MMA.
And what didn't work, you know, which martial art worked or
right.
didn't. And you
started we didn't know
learning
judo
with Royce
from karate, from Kenpo. Or
there's Hapkido, and
right.
you start thinking, what are these things? There's
right.
Jeet Kune Do and Kung Fu, and
yeah.
you just think, what are these? I don't know which one to study. And none of them advertise, oh, ours doesn't really work that well. You know,
right.
they all say we're aimed at real world, that it works. We're aimed at...
Right. And I think I used to get Black Belt Magazine. Remember that one?
Yeah.
It was pretty cool, right? But it was all based on really colorful photos. So, because it's just still photos. So you have no idea what works, what doesn't work, how good is it. It's just how colorful is the picture, how dynamic does it look like.
Well, some of I think it's karate now. You see like the national tournaments now, and it's gymnastics basically. Like they have great athletes. Like the highest level guys are amazing athletes, but it's flips and, you know, they do like...
splits and backflips and spinning kicks.
Yeah, and they're amazing, but...
It's amazing, yeah.
It's not, you know, you don't see them fighting.
Well, there are guys that are bringing karate into UFC.
But they're
now.
Not the guys doing it. I mean, if you're devoting all your time to learning triple backflips, you don't also usually have the time to...
Right. So who are the guys in the UFC now? There's
karate guys?
Yeah.
Steven Thompson, I think, is
Steven
karate
Thompson,
guy.
But he was also a kickboxer. So I think he was like 59-0 in kickboxing. That's amazing.
Lyoto
right?
Machida.
Right. And then there's a young guy, too, that has like the blonde hair. And he's a backflippy guy. Yeah. What's his name?
The Texas guy. The real nice guy.
Yeah.
That,
yeah. He kind of came out of what you're talking about.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
He looks like it, too.
Yeah. I wish I could. What was his name?
I'm blanking on it.
Yeah, but he's pretty good.
Yeah.
But he's not, like you said, he's not a world champion yet. So.
No. But he can still do those flips. And
oh, yeah.
Is that what made you think of him?
Yeah.
He does a flip after
fight. He can do all that stuff. So they do some amazing things, yeah.
Well, like I said last time, I'm not trying to insult any of the martial arts. You know, anyone that gets to a high level at them, they're working hard. They're picking up skills. It's generally not, you know, a lot of them are not based on learning to fight. That might not be
That is interesting. It's, I think if you could do some of those kicks and you can kick somebody in the head with accuracy, that's pretty effective.
Are you in need of stickers, be it for personal or business use? Then you need to go to StickerU.com right now. That's StickerYOU.com. Sticker U is passionate about providing you and your business with the highest quality custom stickers, labels, decals, and iron-ons. They can even make you temporary tattoos. If you want to stick out from the competition, then you need Sticker U, as Sticker U provides the best platform in the world to create custom products that make you stick.
last year I went on this vision quest, and you must have heard me talk about this, where we went to the Canadian Rockies. So we flew to Edmonton and then drove 4 hours out into the wilderness. And part of it was you would camp by yourself for 3 days and eating no food. And I had a journal, as a matter of fact. And I would enter, "Dear diary, I'm not eating today." No, I wouldn't say "dear diary," but you would write
hungry.
Stuff down. Right.
Still hungry.
And you would get some insights. But at any rate, the guy running the show, very nice guy, he'd been doing it for decades. I think he was probably in his late 60s, but he had studied Tai Chi. And he was a really nice guy. And he asked me about it. And he said, "Tell me the truth. Do you think it would really work?" And then I was like, "Well, anything can work in a real fight."
Well, Tai Chi.
Tai Chi, yeah. And then he was into it. He loved it. And he was explaining some of his training to me. And I was like, based on what you're explaining to me, I don't think it's going to help you.
Tai Chi doesn't even make the claim of being a combat.
No. Well, that's where you're wrong, Dan. I think some of them do. Yeah. And this guy, his teachers were making that claim. Yeah. And he goes, "If you had seen this guy, you know, Mike Muckenfutch, some guy, and you would try to grab him and he would just turn and you would go flying." And he would describe, like, somebody would run at him and he would turn and throw, and they had to put a mattress on the wall because you'd throw the guy against the wall.
Yeah.
But, you know, what are you going to do after you throw him against the wall? What do you just keep throwing him against the wall until you knock him unconscious? It doesn't make any sense, right?
Yeah. But also it depends. As we said before, some guys are tough guys. You know, if offensive lineman on the Patriots studies Tai Chi.
Right.
You know,
some guys are so tough, they can study
any
martial art and beat the crap out of you.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. But that was how I finally went and I looked in the Yellow Pages to get back to my story. And I knew about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because we saw Hoist do amazing things in the UFC. And I found Boston Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It was located in Watertown at the time. And I went over there and took my first class with Roberto. And it was awesome. And I felt like I had come home.
And you had also wrestled prior, though, right? So
right,
the mats are familiar to you. And
this is true.
Grappling.
Yeah, it is true. So it is similar, for sure. It's all basically using your body and grappling to manipulate somebody and control them and so forth. So yeah, I was familiar. But I did have that sense of coming home, but it was different. It's not exactly the same thing, but it was also a sense of tribe, like a new tribe, which was giving me something that was missing from my life, you know, a way to express my natural aggression. And the great thing about jiu-jitsu is there's so many different ways to do it. Like, everyone does it in their own personal way, ultimately.
And to your point about finding a new tribe, I think, and again, it doesn't have to be martial art. It can be any, you know, any sort of new thing you're going into, a yoga studio or anything. I think pretty soon you get the vibe of whether or not you fit in there, right? I mean, I think you can go, like, you went in.
Right.
Sometimes it's just the wrong place is what I'm getting at.
Right.
Like, you can just feel I'm not, you know, you give it a little time, but then sometimes it's not the right one for you. And we always talk about that, finding a gym, even martial arts, some are just not right for you.
Right.
And you have to go and experience it and think, is this the one for me or not? And, you know, if it's not, it's not, you know, and people talk about, you know, hear us talking and saying, should it be this kind of martial art or that kind of martial art? But above and beyond is, do you fit in? Do you like it there?
Right.
Is it good people? Because it doesn't matter what you're studying if you don't like it there.
I agree.
You don't fit in.
And if there's not a path of personal growth for you,
right,
then it doesn't work. Yeah.
And then again, that could be a yoga studio. If you go and you feel like people are saying things here I don't agree with and I don't really fit in and I don't like it. And, you know.
Yeah, a certain amount of it is you have to share core values with the community, with the tribe. And then some of it is just completely subjective. Like, it just feels good, right? You just think it's cool.
Yeah.
That's completely subjective. But I did have that feeling when I joined. You said fit in.
Yeah.
That is a big part of a tribe. So I think we naturally start looking around, looking at the people in the tribe, and we start thinking, where do I fit in with this group?
Right. I don't mean to say that everyone has to be similar in, you know, similar personalities, because
I mean fit in, like, we're in my mind, what happened to me in my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu journey, and I think it happens to a lot of people, is once you start getting in there and knowing the other students and the other players, you almost create a pecking order in your mind of, like, well, this is the top guy, and then this is kind of the second guy, and then here I'm down here on the bottom, and I sort of want to ascend the ranks as I can, that type of thing. So I definitely felt that. And the benefit of that is it's aspiring. It gives you, you're like, yeah, I want to be like that guy. Look how good he is, and look what he's doing.
Right. And people can more aggressively sort of help you on that journey too. Like a lot of people for me would point out that you're getting better or encourage right. you, or, you know, some of it's noticing yourself, but also in the right atmosphere, you're going to hear it externally
right.
as well.
You're going to get that feedback, that esteem, where people are going to go, man, you're good. You're pretty good, or you're getting good. You know, it takes a while to develop some mastery, but when you put the hard work in and you develop some mastery, and then you get that feedback from people you respect, people that are in there in the trenches with you, that's pretty rewarding. That feels great.
So did you, like, your first day in feel, this is what I've been missing, or did it take
That's what time? I felt. I felt like I've come home. I'm like, holy cow, this is what I'm supposed to be doing for sure.
Mine was pretty fast too, just in that I didn't have that come home, but I felt that's what I was looking for. That's what I talked last time about. These guys are really, really good. They're not playing around. They're not cutting apples with swords. They're not, you know, showing nunchuck skills. They're winning. You know, they're actually, I can fight as hard as I want and it's not a problem for them.
Right.
And so I felt this is what I've been looking for.
Right. You know? Right. And now that I think about it, you know, it was a really tight-knit group back in the day. Back then, Roberto's Academy was really the only one in New England, I think, maybe. And people came from Rhode Island and New Hampshire and all over the place to go there. It was kind of the mecca for jiu-jitsu. It was really cool. And it wasn't as popular as it is today. So we felt like we were on the cutting edge of something. And I guess we were to a certain degree. So that was really exciting.
Yeah, we've talked before, too, about getting out of your comfort zone and the hardest part often being walking in the door the first time.
Right.
Right. And how do you go about doing that? And part of it, I remember talking with you about this. You know, you're running an MMA gym, which is sort of almost on the extreme of uncomfortable places to go.
Right.
Right. It's a good example in that way that, you know, it's a lot more, I assume it's a lot more uncomfortable than going to a yoga studio or basketball league or, you know, it's, you're going in, if people are unfamiliar with it, and you're like, I'm going to an MMA gym. But the point you made a while ago was you can't, virtually no one is going to stay in business with people walking in the door and getting beaten up. You can't run a business that
way.
That's
not a good business model. Yeah. Give us money and we punch you in the face.
Yeah. Right. I mean, what percentage of people are going to be happy with that in the world? You know, so part of, I think, getting out of your comfort zone is realizing that even in the most extreme example of an MMA gym, you know, it's not going to be as bad as you think. The worst part's going to be your drive over. You know, and thinking, oh, what's going to happen and what, you know, and all the nerves.
But the thing is, when you do become part of the tribe, I think it can open up so many doors for you. So when I became part of that tribe, and there was not a lot of people, there's so many more people training in jiu-jitsu now than back then. So you felt a little special and you felt there was a clear line between people who trained Brazilian jiu-jitsu and those who didn't. And it felt that felt good. It's like, wow, I'm doing something unusual. This is special. And the people that do it, they get it. You know, it's very funny. The Fight Club movie came out right around that time, didn't it?
Yeah.
Was that 1999 or 2000?
Somewhere.
Must have been right around there. And it kind of had that vibe, you know. First rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club. It's a crazy movie, right?
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, even to this day, there's a little bit that hasn't gone away totally. And what I mean is, if you go into your office and you have a black guy from jiu-jitsu, and I don't even mean, again, being punched, it's, you know, you just catch an elbow or just, it's still, there's a kind of a stigma to it. You sort of feel, at least
you're renegated a little bit, right?
Yeah, I felt I didn't feel totally comfortable telling people how I got the black eye because you know the joke is sort of, oh, it looks like you were in a fight, and they say no, I wasn't in a fight, I do this MMA training, and people would feel, well, that's almost as bad, right? You know,
what's wrong with you?
Yeah, why do you do that? You've got kids and you
kind of sicko, are
you? Why are you doing that?
Yeah,
I'm sure that's totally gone away.
You don't think that's
it's gone away a little bit.
I think it's gone away. It's gone away a little bit, definitely. Yeah. You know, I'll tell you why, because I meet some people who are, I'm involved with this group that is a pro-environmental group, and I expected them to maybe recoil at what I was doing, and they were very accepting of it. So I think it's more acceptable.
It's just part of what you said, it's more on TV now, and even, you know, is online, you see YouTube videos of people getting in street fights, and they're applying chokes and, you know, things that you never used to see. So
but at the time, you know, it was a different time, the 90s, early 2000s. And what I did find when I joined that tribe and I was in with this group and we were doing this exciting stuff, and it gave me a way to express myself physically and creatively to anybody that's done Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu realize there's a strong element of creativity and innovation in it. But it was a bit of a wedge that opened up my life for me. So then, like, oh, I don't have to do all the conventions that society's been telling me. I don't have to go to church on Sundays if I don't want to. I don't have to mow my lawn if I don't want to.
I knew it was going to come back to mowing the lawn.
That's what this whole podcast is about, is freeing you from raking and mowing the lawn.
So that's why you enjoy jiu-jitsu. Now I also don't have to rake.
But it creates an expansion of your mindset. You know, yeah. you I am free to go someplace beyond what this other tribe has been telling me, you know?
Right. Or maybe you're in the gym and you have more people that also, you know, don't rake or mow their lawn or, you know, and they...
Right, right. But it's more like there's this area that's off limits, this aggression, you know what I mean? And I can completely suppress it, you know, and not watch the UFC and not watch filthy Seinfeld episodes. Or I can find a healthy, productive, positive way to express my physicality, my aggression, other than just jogging and lifting weights, which is so ponderously boring, right? So I think it gave me that outlet, which is just amazing.
So did you come back from your first class and immediately pave over your lawn and paint it green?
No, I didn't. But I probably did less landscaping than I did before, for sure.
But one point that that you reminded me of is that as far as goal setting, what I found too, and growth, is that I think it's very common. It certainly happened for me. I'm actually never talked to you about this. You kind of come in with a modest goal. Like I remember thinking when I came into jiu-jitsu, I just want to learn something. I want to get better than a beginner. I want to be able to beat a beginner.
Right.
But then you get there and then you think, what kind of goal is that? Like that was such a weak goal. Like I want to get to, and then the next goal is I want to actually be a blue belt. Like I want to get to some level of achievement. Then you get there and you think, what kind of goal is that? I want to get to, and the goals keep expanding and changing for me.
I think that's human nature. And I think it's great because it, you know, it stimulates you to keep growing, but there is a downside to it. You're right.
Because you never reach your goal then.
Well, you never appreciate, you're content to not appreciate what you've gained.
Yeah.
That's really hard to do, right? Yeah. Like now I'm a black belt and I'm like, I should be so much better than I am. I'm crap. But if I compared myself to when I started, I'd probably be amazed. Like, oh my God, look at all the mastery you have, all the skills you have.
But I also thought of this when you're saying how it starts opening your eyes. I think this is extremely common that people come into a jiu-jitsu gym or MMA gym, and you tell me how common it is. I think it's common, but you'd know better, which is you come in and you think, look, I don't want to be punched in the face. So I just want to grapple. I just want to learn jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And almost everyone comes in thinking, I don't want to get punched. It's normal. So I just want to learn jiu-jitsu. And then you do jiu-jitsu for a while and you get where you can tie someone up in a knot. And then you start thinking, it's kind of weird that I don't know how to handle myself at all. You know, I'm a pretty good jiu-jitsu guy, but in a bar or a parking lot, I would just get punched out. You know, so, and now I know the guy well who's teaching boxing. Say, why don't I could try it. You know, I know he's a friend of mine. I know he's not going to beat me up and knock me out. Why don't I try that? And then I think it's very common for people to come in saying, there's no way I'm going to do punching and kicking. That's awful. And then after they get comfortable with the people and with the tribe, they expand that horizon where they say, actually, I could try that. And I've seen a lot of people that had the same story where I came in saying, I'll try, you know, I pretty early on thought I'd try it, but I know
try,
a lot.
When you say try it.
Try stand up as well as ground
striking.
Fighting. Striking. I still don't really like getting punched in the face. I don't think, but. You get less scared when it's someone you know and you think, okay, he's not going to really tee off on me. And I'd go to the stand-up classes and there would always be, I don't want to say half the class or a third of the class, I don't know what number, that started off saying, I'm not going to do this stuff. I'm not going to get kicked and punched. But then they're training for a while and they get more comfortable. And just as I was talking about expanding your goals, you expand in that direction too. You say, you know what, maybe I'll try that too. And they're still talking about fighting, but it can also be other areas too. We start saying, maybe I'll be an instructor here. Maybe I'll join the, maybe I'll come up early and do CrossFit.
Right.
You know, and you start looking.
Well, I think that is the real huge benefit of jiu-jitsu. And the real secret is that you kind of put yourself in a position where it feels very unsafe. But the reality is it's totally safe if you're in the proper academy. And then you get used to being uncomfortable and used to putting yourself outside your comfort zone, and then that's where growth happens. That's where you grow. And just getting used to challenging yourself and getting outside your comfort zone, I mean, that's the greatest benefit you could get from anything. Never right. mind learning how to fight or grapple or mastering something. If you just get in the habit of constantly stepping outside your comfort zone, I mean, that's the secret for personal growth, success, everything.
Right. And you mentioned getting that you yourself got up on a stage. I didn't know, was that before you started grappling or that?
I did, even for stand-up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that before I started grappling.
Was it the same principle, just getting out of your comfort zone and pushing yourself?
I was so shy. I was completely introverted. That was the most terrifying thing I could imagine would be to get on a stage and do stand-up. Yeah. I think I did that. Yeah, probably before that. I think I did that in the late 80s. Yeah, that was terrifying, but it was
right. And when you say the lesson learned is the worst part is thinking about it is before you go out, or is, the drive to the comedy club or backstage
or
then.
I mean, I have a funny history, but maybe people have something similar. You might have something similar. So when I grew up in my neighborhood, I felt like I never fit in. I felt like I was kind of a misfit. I was in a real blue collar neighborhood. People were drinking and doing drugs at an absurdly young age, 11 and 12, people were drinking. My buddy Jimmy Mandeville, he used to get one of those Cool Whip bowls, right, that was empty, and he would go to his dad's liquor cabinet, his bar, and take a little bit out of every bottle and come out with this Cool Whip bowl full of this conglomeration of alcohols, rum, gin, vodka, whiskey, everything you can imagine. And he would drink that out in the snow when we were hanging out. I think we were 12 or maybe 13. I don't know. But I didn't drink, so I was a weirdo. He's 13 and he's not even drinking. What's wrong with this guy? That was the neighborhood I was in. That was the kids that I was hanging around. So, and I was painfully shy. So to compensate, I would try to remember Steve Martin's stand-up routine and repeat it to sort of mime that back to people. And guys would get a big kick out of it, especially after they drank a Cool Whip bowl full of alcohol. They found me very funny.
The sober guys, not as much. But
not as much, but you give them enough gin and whiskey in a Cool Whip bowl, you're going to get some laughs. So that was my way of fitting in. That was my way of dealing with my social anxiety.
But I actually recently had a new insight into this where I was kind of surprised. And this is just a year or two ago.
Do you love delicious high-protein snacks? Do you love low sodium? Then you're going to love Skrizzly Adams Beef Jerky. My signature brand of beef jerky has the lowest sodium in the entire marketplace and completely destroys all its competitors in the taste department. Order now at SkrizzlyAdamsBeefJerky.com. That's SKRIZZLYADAMS BeefJerky.com. This is American recording artist Skrizzly Adams, and I guarantee you're going to love my meat.
I think more people than you think feel like they didn't fit in growing up. Image of all these other guys fit in. But that guy with the Cool Whip ball also felt like he didn't fit in. He's probably right now on a podcast saying I had to fill, the only way I felt to fit in is by filling a Cool Whip bowl full of all this alcohol.
I think you're right. It's probably a universal feeling.
I was at a party recently and there was guys from my high school there. And I wasn't an outcast, but I felt I was in a very wealthy town.
Dan, you felt yourself didn't fit in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just in that it was a wealthy town. I wasn't wealthy.
Right.
I wasn't dirt poor, but I wasn't wealthy.
Right.
And it was always sort of, everyone would go to Vail and ski and I knew nothing about
that's
it.
That's wealthy.
And everyone would have their own pool and their big head. And I just didn't, I had a very small house and it was, I'm not trying to exaggerate. I did fine, but I felt a little bit like the facts are we're in the bottom, whatever it was, 5% of this town.
Got it.
And then, so I was mentioning that at this party just a couple of years ago. And one of the guys there who I thought fit in great, a good athlete, outgoing guy.
Big man on campus.
Yeah, a little bit. Again, nothing's quite as easy in the story. He wasn't the biggest guy, but he
was in the...
And he was known as a tough guy. He won some fights and all this.
Yeah.
And he was saying that he felt completely out of place. And I was saying, why did you feel out of place? And he said, well, both my parents are from, and I can't even, I think Switzerland or, something like this.
Yeah.
And he said, they English wasn't their first language. And I had no idea. I had no idea that was even true. And he said, so I always felt,
Those Swiss slurs that I would hear.
Yeah.
Walking down the street, somebody would drive by and yell out a Swiss thing. Yeah.
So, you know, I sort of felt, wait, you felt out of place for that? I had no idea. And then I started thinking, not all of them, but probably there's similar stories for a lot of people that they sort of felt.
Right.
And then they grow up. And
have
they
you
never...
ever met anybody that said, you know what? I never felt out of place.
I felt completely
I belong completely. And I was completely accepted and admired by everybody. Yeah, you don't really hear that too
much.
Yeah.
Maybe there's people who don't care at all.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I think it's a lot of people. So it's probably pretty common out there that people feel a little bit outcast. And then maybe they worry about joining this new gym or this new activity and thinking, oh, I won't fit in. And
I think people worry about that. And then I think, as I said, when they do join, they do look to fit in somehow. Like, where do I fit? You know, where do I fit vertically on the pecking order of the scale? And who do I fit in with? And so forth.
And I think this is actually, I think, an important thing, too, where people join and then they still feel like they're not fitting in the gym when they are. Because I've run into people
right.
at your gym that took me aside and said, I think we've talked about this, you know, where they say,
I think John hates me.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, I do hate a lot of them. Just kidding.
Say,
no, I love all of them.
If not even hates them, but, you
right.
know, I just feel like I'm not his favorite. I'm not sort of fitting in. He's spending more time with... And we laughed about it before. We said he's spending more time with this 15 and 13 year old kids who are coming in. And I remember feeling, you know, well, yeah, of course he is. Like, you're a grown man and they're kids. But you know, this exaggerated, at least a couple of times I've run into people that sort of felt, I don't feel that I'm totally accepted here. And to me, they were.
Right.
And I think it's sort of, and anyone can get pangs of it. I could get pangs of maybe I'm not in the center
yeah.
of this gym or,
right.
you know.
Definitely.
And I think it's something to resist through your, and this isn't high school kids, this is adults at the gym where they just feel this exaggerated sense of, I don't know where I fit in this tribe. I don't know if I fit in. And you need to relax about it, I think, usually you're doing just fine.
I think so. I think you're right. One of the benefits of the tribe is that feeling of acceptance, but it's a very subjective feeling. So, yeah, you can overthink yourself into thinking you're not being accepted enough.
Yeah, sabotage yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. And then start acting weird, and then you're not accepted as much. It's yeah, that definitely happens, for sure. I can totally see what you're saying.
I mean, and if someone's really not fitting in, you'd handle it, or the leader of the gym would handle it, you know,
That almost never happens unless somebody yeah. has a serious personality defect, I mean, where like they're being destructive somehow.
And that's
something.
Happened literally
once, I think, yeah. Yeah, over 12 years, you know.
Yeah.
It's very rare where somebody is being destructive, I guess. Maybe more than that, but it's a rare thing. Yeah.
We've talked about, too, with your position, you have to try to foresee things that are destructive and prevent them from getting worse. We had a conversation, I remember a long time ago, about and this is something that happens in MMA gyms or martial arts gyms, the concept of, talking to you about the concept of green lighting, right? Do you know what green lighting is?
No.
Where someone is being a tough guy, like maybe beating on someone weaker than them. Or,
right.
And then the green lighting is like, the instructor gave the green light. It means
one of the tougher guys
go beat him up
right.
to teach him a lesson.
Right.
And it sounds good. Like, you know, anyone hearing that's like, yeah, you know, that's awesome.
Well,
like,
people love that.
Love the sound of it, right? Even I get it. I get
that's
it.
That's justice,
like,
right? Justice. The universe is doling out justice.
Right.
That's fantastic, right?
But it's poisonous to the gym was the conversation we had years ago.
Right. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
So you're trying to teach somebody that being cruel and overly, overly cruel or violent is not good by being cruel and overly violent
right.
to them. It's nonsensical. Yeah. I get you want to try to put somebody in their place, but anybody who's wacky enough to be doing that in the first place, I mean, that's a deep problem.
It's not as exciting a story to be like, well, this one guy was just beating on, you know, someone
right.
smaller than him. So you know what I did? I took him aside in my office and I said, hey, we'd appreciate it if you if you didn't do that.
Green
lighting. You don't like the story. I green lighted him, and then who this tough guy came and kicked him in the head. Like, that's a better story, but it's poisonous to the gym, and you have to.
I think so. I think it ultimately doesn't work, although it probably is a fairly common practice. I think a lot. Do you think places do that? Maybe back in the day, not so much anymore. Maybe.
And I think there's smaller amounts that it can be done, and sometimes if it's done subtly enough, it might not even be that bad a thing, you know. But
I think in jiu-jitsu, if somebody's a little out of control and you put them with the superior jiu-jitsu player, they don't even have to submit them. If they just dominate them and control them, that's more demoralizing than being submitted, right?
Right.
When somebody gets you in side control or something and you just can't get out no matter what you do, that's a very
frustrating. It almost forces you also into calming down because you're literally stuck where you are, so you can't sort of be overly violent or overly aggressive. You're stuck.
I think so. I think that's probably the way I operate. If somebody is acting a little crazy, I just sort of tire them out so they can't be that crazy, and then you can have a somewhat normal jiu-jitsu sparring session with them, you know?
Right. And again, we're always using these examples of fighting in the gym, but I had a contractor doing work on my house.
Okay.
And he had people come in, you know, he hires people to come in, you know, workers, you know, to do things. And I overheard him once, some guy, and it's, you know, guys coming in for day labor.
Okay.
And some guy just cursed.
One of the day laborers said a profanity.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, and you know, it wasn't in front of me even, but I heard it like through the vent, and
I heard a muffled profanity.
Yeah. The come down on him really hard. He said, hey, we don't curse on the job site here, okay? Like, I don't want to hear that ever again. You know, like a real strong reprimand, the guy apologizing. And I talked to the contractor later, sort of, you know, it's kind of a roughish sort of crowd and you don't let him curse. And he said, you know, it was first they curse. Mm. Then it's, you know, lighting a cigarette, throwing it on the ground. Mm. Then it's peeing in the hedges.
Mm.
Then it's, you know, I'm not going to clean up. Then it's, you know what I mean? Like, then, hey, guess what? I'm going to just kind of sneak. This is going to be behind the wall anyway. He's not going to see it.
It's kind of like the broken window graffiti thesis in New York when they were policing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of, if I let one thing go, and I think in running your gym or any tribe, you know, that's sort of the idea.
Yeah. Let
something start and then it just grows, you know? No,
yeah. I think growing and garden and weeding is the perfect metaphor. So you have to pull the weeds when they're small. You can't let them take root. And it's something that you have to continually do. And it can't be just the leader who's maintaining the culture. You have to get the tribe members themselves, especially the senior ones, to tend to the garden and tend to the culture and make sure that as a group we're behaving in the right way and we're reinforcing our core principles that we believe in. That's critical for sure. I learned that lesson, I think, the hard way. I thought, I'm a nice guy. I got a bunch of nice people training here. We're going to be fine. And then I realized that it doesn't work that way. You can have one person who's a little bit off bubble, and they can start corrupting the whole culture. So you really have to take an active stance on maintaining it and making your core values clear and everybody reinforcing the right behavior. That's critical, definitely. So, Dan, that was my story, my origin story of how I got into this tribe of jiu-jitsu and how it's changed my life. And it did open myself up to so many other things way beyond jiu-jitsu. When I came into jiu-jitsu, it was to be a badass, to be frank. And I think a lot of people come in for that, to feel that way. And I relatively quickly left that feeling aside and I just loved the art. I fell in love with the art of jiu-jitsu and the physical expression it allowed me. So,
I think that's incredibly common, right? That I think it's 90%. People come in, they want to learn to fight or defend themselves.
Right.
And then later they think that just falls away. You know,
not that important that I really become this master fighter. What's the big deal? You know, if I stay away from last call, if I don't get out of my car when somebody flips me the bird, I really start limiting the times I'm going to need to fight somebody, you know? And nobody really should be, no grown man really should be fighting, or they should be avoiding it as much as possible. So, but the other benefits are the huge ones, and that's what we're talking about. If you find a tribe that allows you to express yourself creatively, to allow you to break out of the tribe you were just born into, I mean, that's the greatest benefit you could get, far beyond self-defense, for sure.
Right.
Do you have any closing thoughts? Any funny stories?
I thought that was a good closing thought.
That
right
was a
there,
good
right?
closing thought.
Didn't you just have a good closing thought right there?
That's a good closing thought. Thank you, Dan. Thank you for co-hosting.
No worries.
I appreciate everything you bring to this podcast.
Sure.
And thank you guys for listening. That's the end of this podcast. Again, I'm John Connors, Power of the Tribe. If you want to change your life, send me a message through Instagram, Facebook. Come by our academy, Connors Martial Arts Academy in Norwood, Massachusetts. And we'll set you on your new path with your new tribe. So until next week, thanks for listening.